I've noticed that there's this special kind of panic that happens when you're in a public bathroom and you realize that you forgot your phone. It's not just boredom, it's something like a phantom limb syndrome, but for the ego. So you're sitting there, staring at the grout between the tiles, realizing for the first time in probably 4.5 hours that nobody's shouting at you or arguing or trying to sell you something you can't afford. And worst of all, you're alone with the one person that you spent your entire life trying to avoid, which is, of course, yourself. And it's terrifying, isn't it? Because that tile grout starts looking real interesting when the alternative is acknowledging the hum of the anxiety and the dread that's in your ears. Our, you know, this kind of, this comes about because our world treats connection like an oxygen supply at this point in time. And if you aren't plugged in and broadcasting your lunch or your outrage or your factory installed personality, people start to think that maybe you've died. Or worse, that you've become somehow unrelatable, God forbid. Now, I've talked a lot about disconnection and isolation and loneliness in my videos, but sometimes I also talk about the importance of solitude and how if you aren't able to sit in silence with yourself and you can't find peace and some modicum of comfort in that, then you're probably not going to be able to find those things in connection either. Because it all starts within, really. So lately I've been thinking about this concept of the monad. Not gonad, monad with an M. Which comes from the Greek word monis, which means unit or oneness. And it derives from monos, which means alone or single. And then sometime later on, philosophy nerds like Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz use this term to describe a fundamental, indivisible unit of reality, like a soul with no windows. It's something ultimately contained and complete. So think of it as a version of reality that's made up of countless individual souls or centers of experience, rather than physical atoms. And then you have the noad, which of course is the drifter. So this is a person who doesn't really belong anywhere because they're busy moving through everywhere. And when you mesh these two together, you get the nomad monad, which I know sounds kind of like a bad indie band name or something. But it's probably one of the only ways to survive our current insanity without having a complete psychological collapse. Now, just a side note, just for the purpose of simplification here, I'm going to abbreviate Nomad Monad to NM in this monologue, because I've noticed that it's just a tad bit of a tongue twister, and I don't want to keep screwing it up, but I digress. So I think of this concept of NM as being like the art of being a self-contained unit while drifting through the world, through a world that is, quite frankly, a dumpster fire wrapped in a neon open sign. You know, we always hear that isolation is a pathology. And the experts warn us that solitude is a public health crisis. And they like to make it sound like spending 3 days without getting a notification is going to cause our synapses to shrivel up to the point where we start talking to our kitchen appliances. And yeah, humans are social animals. We evolved to huddle together for warmth against the cold, hard reality of the world. But now it seems that the huddle has changed, and it's become the problem, because now we're packed so tight into this digital global village that we're breathing each other's recycled air, so to speak. I mean, it feels like we're practically thinking each other's thoughts, and we've pretty much outsourced our internal monologue to an algorithm that was designed by AI, which of course has never felt the sun on its digital face. And, you know, most of this pressure to constantly engage, we know it isn't really about community. It's about surveillance and marketing, and of course, it's about consumerism. But if you try to go against this and to be quiet and you're disconnected, then you're labeled as suspicious and you're allegedly missing out on something. But what exactly are we missing out on? Maybe another 24-hour news cycle designed to keep us, or keep our cortisol levels high enough to make us buy overpriced supplements or booze or whatever. I don't know, another discourse about whether or not some celebrity said something idiotic in 2012. The NM looks at that whole circus and just steps behind the curtain. But this isn't about being a hermit. It's about you realizing that your attention is the only currency that you actually own. And right now, you're spending it like a drunk sailor in a town full of sirens. It's gotten to where we've become terrified of the silence because, well, the silence is where the truth lives. And the truth is usually pretty inconvenient, to say the least. It unfortunately doesn't have a skip ad button. So we stay connected and we tether ourselves to the hive mind with a fiber optic umbilical cord, just hoping that if we stay loud enough, we won't have to hear the sound of our own lives passing by. I think one of the big problems with modern life is that we've mistaken presence for availability. Because your phone is now an extra appendage. People think that they have the right to your headspace 24/7. And because we're all users of technology, we let them in. Which means we've effectively turned our brains into public parks where any idiot with an opinion can set up shop and start screaming through a megaphone. So Blaise Pascal once said that all of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone. You may have heard that before somewhere. Now, he said this almost 400 years ago, long before TikTok and before we had these glowing rectangles in our hands that scream for attention every time someone likes a photo of our cat or whatever. So try to imagine what Pascal would think now. I mean, he'd probably just turn right around and walk right into the ocean. I think a lot of times we get pulled into a crowd, whether it's physical or digital, mostly digital these days, even if we don't really want to. Because the crowd, well, it's a great place to hide from the mirror. You know, when you're alone without a screen to buffer the blow, you start to pick up on things. Things like the way that your regrets have a specific shape and feel. Or maybe you notice the way that your personality is mostly just a collection of defense mechanisms and stolen catchphrases from people that you don't even like. It kind of reminds me of what Schopenhauer used to harp on about, that we're all basically driven by this, what he called, blind, irrational will. This constant, it's like this gnawing hunger that never gets satisfied. And that's the human condition for you. So for him, society was just a bunch of porcupines huddling together for warmth. And if you get too close, obviously we prick each other. But if we stay too far apart, then we freeze. So think of the NM as the porcupine who figured out how to grow a thicker coat. You know, most people, they treat solitude like it's a waiting room. They're just waiting for the next real thing to happen, that the next text, the next crisis, whatever. But if you're always waiting for the world to happen to you, you're just a placeholder. You're not even a person anymore. You're like that extra in the movie of your own life, sitting in the background pretending to eat a salad while the main characters do all the talking. I think there's this uncomfortable honesty in solitude that feels like kind of feels like sandpaper on your soul. I think it's what Charles Bukowski was getting at when he talked about how most people aren't ready for death, but they aren't ready for life either. And we're just sort of trapped in this middle ground there. You know, they're just sort of hovering somewhere, more or less terrified of the silence. But if you can survive that first hour of boredom, and you can ignore the notifications and the desperate need to be seen, something interesting starts to happen. The static actually starts to clear, and you realize that 90% of the things that you were worried about weren't even your worries. They were more like imported worries, and you were just hosting them like a boarding house for other people's anxieties. You know, we've been conditioned to think that self-discovery has to involve a spiritual retreat in Bali or a $400 an hour therapist. And look, therapy can be effective if you're lucky enough to find a good therapist and you can afford it. But even if you can, I think sometimes the best things that you can do for your sanity is just shut the door, turn off the lights, and realize that fundamentally you are the only person that's ever going to be with you from the first breath to the last. And if you can't stand that person, well, then you're in for a potentially very long, very miserable ride. The NM isn't running away from the world. They're just refusing to let the world run away with them. And they understand that the only way to be connected to anything meaningful is to first be able to disconnect from everything meaningless. And this might as well be a violent act, because when you choose to be alone in a world that is demanding you to be constantly visible, it's a form of sabotage on the system. So what you're doing is reclaiming the one thing that the machines can't yet simulate, which is a private interior life. Okay, so now that we've established that the room is quiet and the mirror is honest, you probably shouldn't stay in the bathroom staring at the grout forever, right? Eventually, you got to open the door and walk back into the meat grinder. So this is where the nomad part kicks in. A lot of people think being centered means you're some kind of unshakable statue, like a Zen monk sitting on a mountain while the world just burns. But, you know, a lot of times statues are easy to topple, because if you're rigid, you're breakable. The NM is more like, think of it as being more like a piece of driftwood in a storm. And it goes where the current takes it, but it never stops being wood. It doesn't turn into the water. You ever get that feeling that everything or everybody wants to recruit you for every brand or political movement or I don't know, whatever, religion, spirituality, every disgruntled relative on Facebook who wants a piece of your identity to bolster their own somehow. They want you to be a part of something, and it's usually not something good. But the monad knows that the moment you become a part, you cease to be a whole. Think about Kurt Vonnegut. He had this way of looking at the most horrific, chaotic aspects of human nature, like war and greed and the end of the world, all of it. And just saying, so it goes. That was his famous line, so it goes. But he didn't mean this to be apathy. It was meant to be more like a survival strategy. I would say it's the realization that the world is a giant grinding machine that doesn't care about your feelings, and trying to scream at the gears only gets your jaw broken. Moving through the world as an NM, you're practicing a kind of strategic detachment. You interact, yes. And you know, you're going to work the job and buy the groceries and have the conversations, et cetera, et cetera. But you don't let the hooks get under your skin. It's like, in some way, being a tourist in a country that's undergoing a civil war. You observe. You try to learn the language and even help somebody across the street in some way. But you always keep your passport in your front pocket, and you know where the exit is. It's about being engaged. Yes, but knowing when to bow out. Your home isn't really a zip code or a social circle. It's like a quiet little place behind your ribs that nobody else has the key to. You know, we hear that apathy is the enemy of action. And that's generally true. But most of what we call action these days is just some form of performative twitching. It's reacting to a stimulus like a lab rat and getting an electric shock. But the NM doesn't twitch. So they don't react. They respond, which involves thinking. And sometimes the most radical response is to do absolutely nothing. Basically, it's observing a manufactured crisis and saying, yeah, that looks like a lot of work for a very small payoff. I think I'll go for a walk instead. I think there's a certain gritty freedom in being unrecruitable. and refusing to take the bait of manipulative agendas. And of course, there's a freedom in setting healthy boundaries, which a lot of us don't do in multiple ways. When you don't need the validation of the hive, the hive loses its power over you. And that's when you start to see the strings. You see the way people misuse connection as a way to avoid the terrifying responsibility of their own lives. So Ellen Watts used to talk about how we're all just the works, the whole universe playing a game of hide and seek with itself. We've just forgotten that we're the ones hiding. We've become so convinced of our roles, you know, the father, the employee, the activist, the victim, whatever, that we've lost the actor underneath. The NM is the actor who remembers it's just a play. And you're probably going to play the role better if you aren't worried about the reviews. You can, just walk through the chaos with a certain dry amusement because you know that none of this, the fake neon signs, the all this digital outrage, none of it's actually real. The only thing that's real is the silence you brought with you. And yeah, maybe it makes you a bit of an outcast. People don't like it when they can't find your frequency or your vibe. They want to categorize you and tune you in to figure out what you stand for, who you hate, what you're buying, who you voted for, and so on. And if you don't give them that, you become like a dead zone on their map. But I see that dead zone as a place to grow something authentic, because you get away from all the pesticides of public opinion and you can actually start to figure out what you think. Now, you know, you get to figure out what you think, not what the discourse thinks or what the herd thinks. Just you. And yes, it can be lonely. But I see it as a pure kind of lonely. Think of it as the loneliness of a high altitude pilot. The air is thin, but you can see the curvature of the earth, and from up there, the chaos down below looks a lot like a pattern. But I guess the question is, how do you actually do this without becoming that person who lives in a cabin and mails manifestos to the local news outlets? I think the interaction here isn't to be a prick. It's to be more like a fortress. So Marcus Aurelius, a guy who had the misfortune of being the emperor of Rome while everybody was dying of the plague and the borders were collapsing, he talked about what he called the inner citadel. So he believed that you could build a space inside your mind that no external event could ever touch. Which means you could be in the middle of a battlefield or some toxic work meeting or a family dinner where everyone's arguing, and you could just retire into yourself. Yeah, I know, easier said than done, right? How do you build an inner citadel out of thin air? I think the answer is it starts with a no. A lot of them, actually. Because we live, we're swimming in a yes culture. Yes to the invite. Yes to the notification, to the extra shift, to the opinion. The NM lives more in the no in this kind of culture. It's not a bitter no. It's just a calm but firm refusal to let the world dictate your pulse. This isn't about being a toxically positive self-improvement junkie either. The NM doesn't seek to be better. They just seek to be real. And that's pretty much it. But unfortunately, being real is or can be a dirty, gritty, exhausting job, because it means admitting that you don't have the answers and that most of what you see is a lie, and the only person coming to save you is the one that you see in the mirror at 4 a.m. Scary thought, I know. But personally speaking, I find a satisfaction in this because it's an acceptance of the truth, however ugly it might be, and there's a sense of relief in that. And it's also the realization that you're a survivor on a sinking ship, because you're one of the few people who knows how to swim. I mean, of course, you're not happy that the ship is sinking, and you might even experience some survivor guilt. But you're sure as hell glad that you didn't spend your life savings on the captain's table. You know, we live in a very loud world, especially if you're an introvert. And there's a lot of desperation and there's a lot of demands. But if you're a monad, you're indivisible. And as long as you have that quiet, you can maintain that quiet space inside. They can never truly touch you. So I remember this one time standing in a grocery store line a few years ago, and the guy in front of me was filming some stupid prank for his social media, being obnoxious. The woman right behind me was listening to a self-help podcast on a speakerphone cranked all the way up. And then the self-checkout machine was screaming at me to place the item in the bagging area. And I had this sudden, almost violent realization that I was being processed. And not just my groceries, but my whole being. It was like I had this revelation that I was being reduced to a data point in a room full of noise and just total distraction. And I realized that if I didn't find a way to become a monad, to just retract from this situation, I was going to end up as just another ghost in the machine. So I made some changes in my life, and it's an ongoing practice. All right, so as for how to integrate elements of the monad approach into your life, you know, there's no snake oil or 10-step plan to enlightenment here. I think if we are looking for a way to actually inhabit this nomad monad thing, we have to start sabotaging the expectations the world has on us. And I know that's not exactly easy these days, because we're all immersed in all this pressure. But this is the kind of stuff that I try to do in my own life. So once in a while, I'll burn the map for a day. So I'll drive or I'll take a bus 30 miles to some unfamiliar place. And, you know, I'll park or find a trail to, you know, I'll go to a park or I'll find a trail. Or maybe I'll go to some odd little town and I'll just explore. And I'll get this jagged little spike of anxiety when I realize that I don't know which way is north. But I let it happen, because that's the inner nomad waking up. It's also a reminder that the world is still a, actual physical place, and not just a 6-inch rectangle in your palm designed to sell you shoes or whatever. Sometimes I just like to go walking into the world completely naked. Not literally. Nobody needs to see that. I mean, I leave the phone at home. So I'll walk into a coffee shop or a park or whatever and just be like a ghost. And weirdly, it feels a little like, almost like being a spy in a foreign country, because most of the time I'm the only person in that place who's actually observing a three-dimensional reality that everyone else is either ignoring or just preoccupied reading, you know, or recording something for an audience that doesn't really care anyway. So for me, it's about becoming un-algorithmable, which I guess is sort of like today's method of being ungovernable. And I do it by trying to cultivate interests that have zero market value. So in other words, I try to find something that isn't going to, or wouldn't look good on a resume, or won't improve my so-called brand or whatever it is. I might wander the neighborhood hoping to find that rare outdoors cat, or spend some time just sitting in the woods zoning out on nature. And I think when you do something purely because it exists and you exist, you're basically practicing being a monad. You're existing in honor and respect of yourself instead of your cog status in the machine. And I think doing these types of things means that you're building a life that the machines can't predict, which ultimately means they can't own it. And if they can't own you, well, then you get to be free. And your freedom and your time, these things are, in my humble opinion, far more valuable than materialism or status. in a system that just sees you as a modern day serf. Okay. I think that's all I've got today on this topic. As always, thanks for listening.